Thank you for listening to the Content Magazine podcast, Conversations with Silicon Valley's Creatives. I'm Daniel Garcia, your host and the cultivator of Content Magazine, published by SV Creates.
Hello, welcome to the Content Magazine podcast. I'm Daniel Garcia, the cultivator of Content Magazine, and we are here in our sofa studio today with Zach Walden, who is the CEO, founder, leader, head honcho of Tailored by Design, LLC. Right? You got the LLC?
Sir. I got the LLC on the back end.
Yeah. So before we get into all that kind of stuff, I love what you said the other day, and I kind of want to play on that throughout the theme of this. When we were hanging out, and you were saying that you are kind of like the Zach of all trades, which is interesting. If I look at kind of like your history of the different experiences that you have done a lot of various kind of things. Mm-hmm. But I want to kind of start with wrestling.
Yeah.
Okay. When did you did? Because you're now you're reffing or umpiring. What's the term?
Yeah, refereeing.
Refereeing for youth wrestling, or is it
it's youth as well, but I do a little bit less youth now. But it's high school and college.
Okay, cool. Oh, college level.
Yeah, level. So, So I started wrestling when I was in like second grade.
Second grade, really?
Second grade.
Because you have a brother, so the wrestling began.
I have an older brother, and then on top of that, my the wrestling began in the household. Yeah. My father was a wrestler.
Oh, okay.
His brothers were wrestlers.
Yeah.
And my mom actually was a stat girl, which is like the person that keeps the stats.
Yeah,
and that's funny enough how my mom and my dad connected. So
wrestling's
been like a core.
They met on the mat.
Yeah, more or less. So that's kind of been a constant thread throughout my life. And started wrestling in second grade. We had moved from Tracy to Livermore, California. My parents were the coaches in the middle school during my time where my brother was in middle school.
Awesome. Okay.
And it was funny. I wrestled as a fourth grader in like the sixth grade class.
Oh, okay. Oh,
and
so
then as a fifth grader, grader, I wrestled in the sixth grade class. So by the time I hit sixth grade, I had been wrestling on the middle school team for 3 years.
Dang.
And they're like, when is this kid going to graduate? Like, is he not passing his classes or something like that? But it was, my parents were the coaches and they were kind of above board.
So you were getting a lot of like technique instructions.
Exactly.
Like, but did you have pretty much raw wrestling talent and strength?
Not really. A little bit different. I'm a little bit tall and slender of a build, and I learned over time how to use that to my advantage.
Yeah.
And then, when you have your older brother who's a pretty good wrestler in his own right, and we're wrestling at the household constantly, there was a certain point in time where I would just lose. He was bigger in size, bigger in strength, but he kind of paved the way, and I learned from his mistakes, and I learned from watching him wrestle, and then kind of used that to my advantage, and then wrestled in high school, did fairly well, and went to wrestle at San Francisco State. Was only there really for a year. Got cut due to like Title IX, which was big during that time. And Title IX is based off the amount of female athletes and male athletes that is being sponsored by.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So after that, my brother kind of jumped into officiating, and I followed him, and then been officiating now for about 12 to 13 years, kind of as a way to give back to the sport and allows me to compete in my own way. They actually rank officials.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So if you do well, you move up, and you're doing the college level because you've done well at the
in the high school level. Yeah.
The
so
Pop Warner League
exactly. So as you kind of get better, the competition gets more fierce. You got to see. And it's just like anything else. It's like any sport. What you put into it's kind of what you get out of it. So I've put about, 10, 12 years into it.
Wow.
And the reason why I couldn't go to the pickup party, actually, was because I was reffing the state competition meet in Bakersfield.
That's
so
cool. So then with, is it like if you see other youth sports, even especially like baseball and even soccer, I mean, like the parents scream.
Oh, yeah.
Is it that type of kind of, I have to say, I actually, they did try to get me to wrestle.
Oh, okay.
When I was younger.
Yeah.
But then they realized I have no strength.
No balance, no strength, no.
So I don't have that much knowledge. But is it like, it doesn't seem like it is the type of sport. I mean, like, you would give a point or a takeover and then people, that wasn't a, is it that
kind
of
thing? Oh, yeah. No, it's a very, what's funny about refereeing wrestling is there is this kind of this topic called judgment, right? There are certain calls that are based on judgment, not necessarily based on a rule application.
Okay.
Obviously, there's rules applications that you're supposed to stick by,
sure, yeah.
and you have kind of touch points, but yeah. judgment allows for interpretation, and that
yeah.
interpretation leads to disagreement.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I've definitely been scolded slash cussed at slash yelled at by
yeah.
many parents.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just kind of the process yeah. of any sport. I will say, though, that women's wrestling is like the fastest growing sport right now in high school.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and like it's been interesting to see because wrestling has never really gotten its kind of due in
yeah.
the sports realm because, like, your options are you go to the Olympics or you go to UFC and you get punched in the face.
Right, right.
So it's interesting to see now that women's wrestling is, like, starting to grow and grow and grow, and it's been exponential over
yeah.
the past few years. So
it is interesting. Wrestling, it does – it definitely in junior high and high school and college and the Olympics, it's like it's huge and it's there. But, it's not really turned, as far as I know, into,
yeah.
like, a spectator or – professional sport like basketball, football, soccer.
Not in a professional sense.
Yeah.
But I will say that everything I've kind of accomplished, personal and professional, comes from the level of dedication you learn
yeah.
through wrestling, right?
Well, that you already did the transition. That's what I was going to ask you, right? Like, what is it? What are some of the lessons you think that you've learned from doing wrestling?
Yeah, dedication. I mean,
yeah.
the majority of sports don't require weight management. But
oh,
in high
yeah.
school, I
you're
mean,
spitting, you're wearing
yeah.
like a bag around you to
well,
lose.
That's actually illegal. And
oh, it is.
I gotta
it
say
wasn't
that.
Back when I
yeah.
was around. Yeah.
Over time, the sport has evolved and the rules have evolved to for the safety of the athletes.
No steroids now. Gosh.
No, but with that, it really is kind of added a level of dedication and,
okay.
and really lifestyle. Like what you do is who you are. And,
yeah.
and I think. That dedication has led to the success that I've had and immersing myself and learning everything I can whenever I'm tackling a new subject. I know you
yeah.
kicked it off with
yeah.
Zach of all trades.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I like to have a diverse lifestyle. I like having different groups of people that I connect with for different reasons. I like
yeah.
having work constantly be interesting because it's
yeah.
a new topic every day. But really immersing myself and digging into that particular subset or that particular topic and immersing myself in it for a period of time is
yeah.
what's really allowed me to be successful and that
yeah.
full dedication to it.
Yeah, I guess it is. I mean, well, if you're doing any sport, it takes dedication. But I don't think even with basketball, football, soccer, and I guess baseball is considered one of the top ones. You don't need as much dedication. But you do need discipline. And then to move ahead, you definitely have to watch your diet and stuff. But wrestling, yeah, right? I mean, when a pound could make you not be able to wrestle that day or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. So are you a disciplined person? I mean, do you eat like, you know, just you get up at the same time every day, you have chicken and rice only, and you only drink green tea three
yeah.
times a week? I mean, it's like what level of your OCD discipline?
Yeah, and I try to keep it probably in the business sense now. That's kind of where I use
yeah.
as an outlet. There's definitely times in my life where I am very strict depending on what the goal is that I'm trying
yeah.
to achieve. So
yeah.
I've definitely done the chicken and rice thing.
Yeah.
I'm not always perfect. I don't think anyone is, but it's really about that level of consistency
yeah.
that gets the results. How long can you be consistent at that particular
yeah.
thing?
Totally.
But I've found, you know, as I've gotten older, it's more about being content and being happy with
yeah.
what you have and,
yeah.
A constant strive of improvement, but
yeah.
Especially when it comes to like the restaurant consulting piece, like
yeah.
I eat out a lot.
yeah.
So
yeah, that's right.
For the times when I'm not,
yeah.
I definitely have to be disciplined because
yeah.
I know that those moments as part of my job will come up where it'll lead to
yeah.
tasting five cocktails in one sitting or it'll
yeah.
be tasting a menu or
yeah.
providing feedback or
yeah.
going and trying the local food truck. So for me, I try to keep a discipline when I can. But I also like sharing my skill set and my passion with others.
Yeah.
So it leads to
yeah.
moments of reprieve and moments of discipline and just applying it when those times are appropriate.
Yeah, yeah. So discipline, yeah, that's cool. So then interesting, though, I have to just kind of say as an outside observer, we don't know each other super well, but discipline, and yet I've seen like you've had – different kind of career trajectory. I mean, you were at
yeah.
San Francisco State. You were doing marketing. Was it business
yeah,
and marketing?
It was integrated. Yeah. So it was integrated marketing communications.
Integrated
yeah.
marketing communications. And then, so where did you career-wise launch from there?
So yeah, so from San Francisco State, was there for 3 years and then transferred to San Diego State.
Okay.
Was what occurred. And then I went into integrated marketing communications for San Diego State. And then always had a love and passion for music. Am not super musically.
Oh, you DJed for a little bit. Yes. Do you still DJ?
I still do DJ, actually. Yeah. I DJed at the opening of one of my clients' speakeasies.
Okay.
So
right.
I DJed there.
Did that start in San Diego then?
Yeah. So San Diego is kind of where it all kind of came together for me from a hospitality perspective.
Okay. Hospitality. Okay.
So what happened was, is I was DJing. It was a great way to make money. I didn't want to join a fraternity. That really wasn't what was meant for me.
Yeah.
But I wanted to be be a social person. So I started DJing and kind of applying my love for music in that realm. And then was DJing 4 to 5 nights a week in San Diego. It was essentially my full-time job.
In the Gaslight District?
So it was in the Gaslamp District. It was in PB, which is like Pacific Beach. So I was DJing kind of all over throughout San Diego. And then, but a lot of the restaurant scene in San Diego, they start as restaurants and then they would kind of convert to these quasi nightclubs in a variety of different places. So I started just really digging into some of the concepts that were there from a restaurant perspective and falling in love with that.
And that makes sense.
Was like, hey, I want to apply this to creating cool experiences for people to become a part of. But then I moved back, was DJing here in San Francisco. I think I did 2 or 3 gigs in San Jose back in that time.
Yeah.
But now I'll be DJing this Friday at the Kimpton Hotel in San Francisco.
Okay, cool. You say what's your style? What's your kind of flair?
Yeah. So
what's your unique sound that you bring
totally,
to DJing? I'm curious.
Yeah, totally. So when I first started, electronic dance music was really taking off. Oh, yes. Swedish House Mafia and Alesso and those guys. So the progressive house movement was really taking off. But I liked mixing a lot of things together. So I was DJing under the DJ moniker, What's Up. I was DJ What's Up.
What's Up?
Yeah. I wanted to, my brother and I remember we made the first
logo.
With
a Z.
Oh, yeah. With a Z. Exactly. Including the initials into it. So I was DJing under What's Up, did that for a period of time. I set a goal that I wanted to DJ in Las Vegas. And then it was like, as soon as I did that, I took a long break from DJing.
Okay. Yeah.
5 or 6 years
of
break from DJing. And just last year,
Were you scheduled to DJ at the Fire Festival?
I was not.
Okay.
I wish I was, because then I could have made my way into the documentary, would have been that would have been some great PR in a real way.
Yeah, yeah.
No, but... Yeah. So just kind of have been around people that are in the scene and kind of have taken a step back from it. And as of recently, got offered a gig to do a country music festival, actually. It was an EDM country music mashup festival.
Okay.
Called Blazing Saddles. It was in Sacramento.
That's awesome.
Great name, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Michael Hargis is a restaurateur there, and me and him have kind of always been connected, and he was like, hey, I don't – like, country's a new thing to me, and I grew up listening to country music. So – I was like, hey, if you need an opener, let me know.
Yeah.
He brought me in. I was playing on equipment that, like, I've never played on. And I threw down a country music set.
Yeah.
And I had just the greatest time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, wow, I really miss this. I miss the music. So
cool.
Started DJing. Now I do a couple of places. Revival, which is a rooftop in Sacramento at a Kimpton Hotel.
Oh, cool.
San Francisco Kimpton Hotel. And now I'll be doing...
traveling.
Yeah, just a little bit. Not too much. Sacramento's not far. 2 hours.
So that's cool. So then in college, San Diego, focusing on marketing, DJing to make some money, that got you exposed kind of like to the restaurant.
Yes.
And then the hospitality thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then, because now you're doing, and then you were doing some video stuff. I mean, that's brought you to San Jose,
yeah,
right?
How
did you get from...
there to here.
Yeah. Give me the. I'm confused.
Yeah, I'll catch you up to speed.
I'll catch you
up to speed. And I think
for our listeners at home.
Yeah, and I'll predicate it. I actually, this is an underlying thread, and I think it kind of connects everything. I actually grew up a Disney kid, so I grew up going to Disneyland and stuff. And the thing that fascinated about Disneyland
that changes the whole perspective. I think we're gonna have to cancel that.
Okay, it's been fun, guys.
Disney kid. Okay, what do you mean? Were you in like musical theater type?
No. I grew up going to Disneyland often. So,
okay, all right.
One of the things I loved about Disneyland, and I say this to this day, is the trash cans. well, what do you mean the trash cans? Sure. It's not Space Mountain. It's not XYZ. It's like, well, no matter where you go in the park, the trash cans are different.
Yeah.
And it's meant to match the environment. Yeah. And when I started doing the restaurants in San Diego and DJing there, the environments that I wanted to be in specifically had that attention to detail, that level of design that was tailored to the experience, which kind of leads to why I named my LLC what it is. Yeah. I moved back to the Bay Area. I had my family here. I had my first job offer, which was working for a credit union. Not really relevant, but moved back here and decided, hey, I want to get into hospitality. I was paying off some school loans, and I took a job with a consulting firm in Emeryville, which no longer exists.
Emeryville does, but the consulting firm.
Yeah, the consulting firm does not. Laid off very quickly, not due to lack of performance, but just like it was a hard time for that industry. And I took a job working for a restaurateur called Adriano Paganini, who had a restaurant group called Back of the House.
Okay.
And I was really coming in as an intern, helping market their fast casual concepts, which was Super Duper Burger, Uno Dos Tacos, and then at that time we were launching a restaurant called The Bird.
Okay.
Did that, launched The Bird, worked on a few other restaurants.
Just in that, though, were you kind of looking to get into that hospitality thing? You were actually, you went out to do, from like, your first kind of, like, job to get settled coming back.
Of course.
The credit you, but you were thinking, like, hey, I want to try to get into
I wanted to own restaurants. And what's funny is...
you wanted to own restaurants. You're thinking, it's still possible.
Probable.
Yeah, probable. Okay, good.
But with that, I would say I wanted to own restaurants. Yeah. It goes back to like fifth grade. I had a resume. You know how you create your first resume in elementary school. At the top of it, you put an objective, and that objective for me was I wanted to own a snack shack because I was an athlete. There's a snack shack.
Yeah,
that's where everyone kind of like socially would go
post
the game. That was the celebration.
Yeah. Still be a good name for a restaurant.
Zach Snack Shack.
Yeah, right. You thought about that.
Of course I've thought about it. I don't want to put my name in the majority of restaurants I want to open. I want it to be about the environment and the particular cultural cuisine that we're highlighting or the experience of that.
Yeah, yeah.
So started working with that restaurant group, left there, started doing kind of small business consulting, specifically around social media.
Okay.
And then went and worked for another restaurant group, the Mina Group, with Chef Michael Mina.
Yeah.
And that's where it kind of like,
okay,
that was my
you
big
got the
kind
bug.
Of, yeah, I got the bug. Yeah. They opened 14 restaurants in 12 months while I was there.
Dang.
And I learned just an incredible amount. But one of the things that I identified, I was the marketing manager, and we were kind of going through a variety of different openings. And at that time, video marketing, like Instagram just started doing video.
Totally.
And I thought video marketing was like the avenue to make a difference. The problem was is because I was dealing with some of the tactical pieces of helping open 14 restaurants in 12 months from a marketing perspective, we didn't have the time. We didn't have the resources.
Yeah.
So I left the Mina Group to start a video marketing agency, and that's what landed me in San Jose was my first client, which is SJ Walls.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how
we
landed here.
And you got in San Jose. So now you're in San Jose. And you've been here then since 2014?
Yeah, roughly about 2014,
15. But you're not just thinking, you're thinking Bay Area. If you're thinking restaurants.
Actually, it would
right?
be 2014, 2015. It would have been later. It would have been about 2018 is roughly the time. Yeah.
Okay. All right. But if you're thinking restaurant, I mean, restaurant business in San Jose is very difficult.
Yeah, it's a challenge.
I mean, it's difficult anywhere.
Yes.
But there's something unique about the difficultness.
About the challenges that San Jose faces.
So then I imagine you're looking Bay Area. Like you're like Pleasanton, Livermore area, right?
Yeah, grew up in Livermore, California.
There's a lot of winery connections up there.
Yes.
I mean, that would be, I think, a great restaurant.
Livermore's taken off from a hospitality perspective. There's some really great restaurants out there. Range Life does an impeccable job. That was a couple that was working in the San Francisco scene that came out.
Okay, yeah.
There was a gentleman who just opened up actually a seafood restaurant out there that was working for a sushi restaurant called Robin. So the scene in Livermore's taken off. But over time, starting with video, I've come to love the opportunity that San Jose presents.
Yeah.
There is a lot of challenges with the San Jose market.
Yeah.
There was back then, there is now. There's been additional challenges. We haven't even touched on COVID yet, but like the challenging scene that it presents. But I do think there's opportunity, and I really believe on a mission of vibrancy and on a mission of excitement, it starts at the ground level. It starts with the retail and restaurant experiences people get to enjoy. And being a part of that is kind of become a little bit of my mission at TBD, is to really have a true effect on that ground floor experience.
So you're definitely looking at this whole kind of like tailored by design, what you're doing from multiple kind of like personal experiences, and also, I mean, the Disney mindset, like the user experience and stuff like that. So what for you, you have a couple of clients that you're working with. Each kind of one is hiring you for kind of a different reason, is that?
Yeah, different reason, different experience.
And, kind of go through, is there a couple, maybe like, maybe three that you could say that you're working with right now that's public.
Totally.
Not top secret.
Yeah.
That you can say like, oh, and this one specifically, I'm kind of like flexing this muscle. This one I'm doing this, and this one I'm doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. So Urban Vibrancy Institute is where we'll kick it off. Okay. That's, you know, I've had a great relationship with the board of directors for a while, and they were having a change in executive director, and that left the ability to execute the block parties and bring vibrancy to San Jose. It aligned with kind of my secret mission of what I was hoping to accomplish. So for that, that's events management. It also is teaching me new things, working with a variety of different people on kind of the sponsorship piece, which is something I haven't really had a whole bunch of experience
with. So then you're actually for that, you're actually helping find the sponsors for these different events as well as organizing the programming. Is there a band?
Exactly.
Are there booths that are selling things? Is there beer, the food?
Totally. Yeah, it's purely event management.
Yeah.
Like it's like an event management piece with some sponsorship additive kind of nature to it.
Yeah.
But it's more around just like bringing vibrancy through event management. So hosting the six block parties, talking through the entirety of the program and executing that program, which I got from my time at Creekside Socials and what I've gone from a variety of other things. And then there's kind of the restaurant operations piece. And that was my latest client, S, which is a speakeasy in Santana Row. The restaurant it's connected to is called Suspiro, where I was brought in to help run through some of the extra logistics on how this was going to operate. How is the user going to experience what it's like to go to a speakeasy in a Santana Row, which is an area that historically hasn't had that type of experience. And how does it operate with the restaurant? How does it operate separately from the restaurant? And how do those experience kind of come together?
Yeah.
So that's kind of a restaurant operation consulting piece.
Right.
And then there's, we'll say, my own events, like talking about the Taco Throwdown, which you and I have kind of touched on, where it's like, it's bringing together the holistic view of like restaurant curation, working with some of the restaurants that I love and I think are doing great food programs, some of the food trucks that I see that are coming up, and putting that all into a one-day event, into a food festival that people then can enter into and hopefully present a high level of experience that they would want to do another event or a different type of experience.
Yeah.
So
that's cool. Yeah. So then, that's what I say is like, you know, in some ways, when you look at a resume, you see somebody like doing multiple things, you think like, oh, what's up? Right.
Mm-hmm.
But what you're kind of doing is like, you're the
Zach of all trades.
You're bringing into your kind of consulting organization different specialties that could be used. And now, right now, is it just you or do you have someone else that's helping you?
I mean, you got somebody. I have a very small team that I don't talk about very much.
Okay.
But
why?
Great question. I just like to keep them hidden because they're better looking and more well-spoken than
right,
I am.
Exactly.
No, I think, you know,
you might let them go at any minute.
Exactly. You understand how that is. But no, I believe that the value that I provide or a certain level of confidence I bring to projects is I'm either going to know how to do this thing because I've done it for somebody else. I'm either going to figure out how to do it and do it to the best of my ability, or I have people that I can call.
Yeah.
That have done this before that I can bring to the table. Yeah. My network is definitely where my net worth has landed, and that's based off of doing great things and really curating relationships as much as I can.
Yeah.
I do have a small team. It is project dependent that I can kind of pull on. But
right on.
For me, it's a couple things. It's like Swiss Army knives are interesting, right? Because you have all these different tools, but none of them are really good at the one thing that they're designed to do because it's really meant to be
a multi-tool
use. Yeah. I try not to operate that way. I try to operate on what is your need? How can I fulfill that need?
Yeah.
But
you're more of a Leatherman than a Swiss Army knife.
But utilizing essentially those other aspects to inform a holistic viewpoint of like, how can I connect with you and understanding your problems to really solve the problem you're looking for? Most of the time when someone calls you and says, I have this problem that I need solved, it's never the direct problem they actually need solved, because usually things are connected.
Yeah.
So for me, it's like, how can I use my marketing background to understand that you're wanting this speakeasy to operate a certain way to get a certain particular demographic and clientele to create a certain experience through my operations background to have it all connect to holistically solve the actual problem you're looking for, which is I want this business to be successful. So I try to bring the diversity of experiences I have to the table of like, oh, there's a musical component? Okay, well, I used to DJ. I know a variety of DJs in the marketplace. Let me curate what type of music and sound needs to be in this environment to attract the demographic you're looking for. Oh, there's an events piece. How do we launch this speakeasy? Okay, let me hire one or two people that I know can curate a particular guest list that then fit within what the need is you're looking for with the demographic of the successful business.
That's cool.
And it's just utilizing the different touch points to kind of, it all falls under placemaking. It's like, to me, it's like, what's the sounds, what's the taste, what's the environment, what's the smell to a user experience. But it's utilizing the holistic kind of experiences that I've had to curate to the specific need that you may not be asking me to solve for, but does need to be solved for.
For you, then, what would be what's the driving factor for you in doing this? Is it a love for food? It's a love for placemaking, but then love for, you say what it is, and then I'll ask the question off of that. How's about that? You answer it.
That's fair.
What is the driving motivation or principle or idea that kind of has you doing these things?
Yeah, I would say I look at San Jose as my own personal Disneyland.
Okay.
And I want to curate it to the best of my ability to make it an interesting place where community comes together.
Okay.
For me, when you're looking for community coming together, you need two things. You need real estate, which is where I've spent some of my career. I have a real estate license. I can lease space to restaurants and retail and execute that piece of it. But it's also restaurants. I find that there's no better way to bring people together than having 20 tacos in a building on, the weekend of Cinco de Mayo for people to go experience food. And I think food has a great way to translate culture, to translate experiences and stories, and having people come into that environment is truthfully where I think San Jose has an ability to differentiate itself as a city is through the diversity, through the diverse experiences and cultures that we can celebrate here.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, I feel like food is the new entertainment in a way, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I think, back like when I was growing up, we went out to eat only on special occasions. Once in a while, birthdays, anniversaries, funerals, weddings, whatever, right?
Absolutely.
Now it just seems like everybody is eating out and doing that kind of stuff. So in that, what's your thought of that? What was like if food and restaurants are kind of just entertainment, what's the plus and minus of that?
Yeah, the plus and minus of restaurants being entertainment is hopefully more frequent use, right? Because I would say people go and enjoy their leisure activity in certain ways. And if we look at, when there was the California exodus of people leaving and everyone was banking it on, oh, it's cheaper real estate out there. Yeah, but it's also there was more curated experiences, a more diversity of experiences from a hospitality ground plane that were also prevalent in the markets that people left to go to experience.
Are you talking about like going to Portland or Austin or something?
Exactly,
like that,
right? Or Nashville, right? Yeah, it's like, Nashville. Oh, real estate cheaper. Well, it's not just that. They have kind of created the cultural experiences.
There's a there to go to.
Yes, exactly. So like how do we build that there here in San Jose is kind of the driving factor.
Yeah.
Going back to your question about, the pluses and minuses of people utilizing food as entertainment is it has the ability to essentially differentiate itself based off the type of experience you're providing, but it's also food is a utility at the same time.
Right.
Food is something like everyone needs nourishment and where are they finding that nourishment? And so it's like, okay, it's something that's needed. It's part of, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Like if we're getting down to, getting down to the actual piece of it. Yeah, exactly. But it's also like, okay, then how do we incorporate the experience that a guest is having to really differentiate ourselves in the marketplace? Is it great food? Talking about one of my favorite restaurants right now, Good Time Wine Bar, right? It's a natural wine bar, but the food is spectacular.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go to that wine bar over the next one because I'm probably going to be hungry and I want a chef, Alex, to put me together a delicious dish that I've never had before. Yeah. And it goes to the exploration of like why I go there versus a different wine bar.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's true. I mean, in some ways it makes it a, I would just think some of the downfall would be then it's not really necessarily if building community to have food be entertainment. It's just, it's kind of like, it's just something to do. Do you know? So it kind of like lowers the bar in a way. But then another time also, it's kind of like, then it does make the opportunity for those standout places to really to, you know, excel and stuff like that. So.
And I think for San Jose to get to kind of the vibrant ground plane that it's looking at to be, we need more standout places than the competitive analysis of other places within the Bay Area. Exactly. It's like we need to stand out in that area. And through that, hopefully food is a piece of the puzzle that we can bring to the table.
Yeah. So I have another interest question. So I've, you know, scrolled your Instagram and stuff like that. And then you very much honor your mother on Mother's Day a lot. What's kind of like, I mean, that's awesome. It's great.
Yeah.
But talk about your mom's role in your life then. I mean,
it's a good question. You know, my mom, my mom's taught me a lot about hospitality and more importantly, how to treat people and is a big piece of my life. My family is kind of the safe haven of my life. Yeah. And my mom has taught me a lot of the pieces of who I am that have led me to be a person that I actually enjoy being. And I haven't always been a good son. You know, I think everyone has their natural sins. I had went through a breakup in my lifetime where it affected me in a real way. And during that time, I was not the son that any mother would deserve, let alone mine, who's been such a stalwart in my life and has been a consistent person to teach me what love is. So, you know, I try to honor her as much as I can now. Not necessarily to make up for the times where I've been a bad son, but to give her kind of the respect and love she's always deserved.
That's cool.
I try my best. You know, every person comes from their background, like where they come from and who they are and in the life experiences that they've had. And no one likes to talk about kind of the challenging times in their life where they weren't not only the best version of themselves, but where they hurt the people that are closest to them. And hopefully in the ability of talking about that, you can kind of learn more about yourself and make the adjustments to your life as you're supposed to. And my mom, to this day, I'm going to see her later today. Actually, we're grabbing dinner. We'll do. I'm going to see, you know, my family's probably the most important group of people in my life, followed by, you know, starting with God, then family, then friends, and then business. Business is wildly important to me, but I also know the people that are most important to me are the ones that will show up if I had nothing. Mom and dad, not to give dad not the street cred that he deserves too, but mom and dad have not only been at the top of that list, but have proven to be at the top of that list. So
It's great to know, to be in a place right where you have a safety net, right? Like even if you were to try something and it didn't work out, or the people that are your cheerleaders no matter what.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? That's like
those are the people that are going to show up to the funeral. Right? And and I do try to operate hopefully in a place where I can have those people that are there that I that's where impact is really made. I want to make a large macro impact for the city of San Jose. Because I feel I have the skill set and kind of the diversity of experiences to do that. But I also want to operate with a certain level of integrity and love and care and connection to those that really, if I were to die today, will remember me the most.
Do you have kind of like a guiding personal life philosophy or focus or anything like that that kind of drives you and
grounds you? I think, you know, you and I have talked about faith a lot, obviously. So obviously utilizing that as the guiding principle, Jesus as the standard and operating that. I also try to give myself a certain level of grace because I'm not perfect. Nobody is. But when you think about, you know, somebody watching the TV of your life, seeing every piece of it.
Yeah.
What does that look like? And what are the points and moments that you'd be ashamed of, yeah, or where you become the, we'll say, the villain of your own story?
Yeah.
And one of those moments in time where you're proud of yourself. And I try to operate from a level of, okay, am I going to be proud of how I handled this situation as much, yeah, as I can? Yeah. So for me, it's definitely as trying to be as biblical as possible. I also have a Bible verse on my chest that I kind of remind myself,
oh, yeah,
of.
Can you, do you want to share?
Absolutely,
that?
Yeah. Not at all. You've already covered.
I mean, like,
yeah,
show your chest.
Oh, like, just totally. I flash the camera.
No, what is it? What, yeah,
yeah,
what does it
so,
say?
I have 1 Corinthians 16:13-14, which says, be on your guard, stand firm in the faith, be courageous, be strong, and do all things in love. Mm. And those kind of five pillars are, you know, be on your guard, be watchful of the moments that are coming in life, because, yeah, if you're not prepared, you probably are not going to operate in your best self. You know, stand, yeah, firm in the faith, understanding that I'm not here to please everybody. Yeah. I'm here to do the best of my ability, and using faith as my guiding principle. Be courageous, not being afraid to take risks, not be afraid, yeah, to throw it out there.
Yeah.
Be strong is pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah.
And then always doing everything predicated by love.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it leads to tough love. Sometimes it leads to honest love. Sometimes, yeah, it leads to, and if you talk to the majority of my friends, one of the things they'll tell you that they like and hate about me is I am transparent. You know where I stand. There is no question.
You seem pretty straightforward.
I try to shoot straight because, yeah, yeah, I feel like there's no question about where I'm coming from.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
There's no, you know, I hate the moments where I'm like, I don't know about that person. Like, did they like it? Are they uncomfortable?
Yeah.
And having that direct communication, and it's something I've gotten from my family, and it's something that I also think is just,
yeah,
if you know where someone stands, you can operate based off that information. There's, yeah, not a, well, I'm operating because I think they may or may not feel this way.
Yeah.
So it's led to a pretty direct piece of the puzzle, yeah, of how I communicate, and it's, in business, it's been positive and negative, and in personal relationships, it's been positive and negative, but, yeah, it's who I am, and those that love me for it, love me for it, and those that don't,
yeah, you
they
are
don't.
You are.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So I want to circle back just a little bit. So it was a romantic relationship that went bad. And,
yeah,
like,
it was an engagement that was called off 10 days before the wedding.
Oh, man, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's okay.
How long ago was that then?
That would have been 2017. That's how I was able, funny enough, to kind of calculate that I was,
right,
2018, because I remember.
Yeah.
So I have an event that I kind of,
yeah,
remember. But no, yeah, it was, you know.
It's a growing experience.
Growing experience. One that I'm thankful for now.
Yeah.
Wasn't thankful for then.
Yeah, no, that's hard. Yeah.
But it's one of those things that's kind of been a, you know, everyone has their pillars of moments in their life,
yeah,
and
yeah, events, yeah,
and an engagement called off 10 days before naturally leads itself to being that, but yeah.
And you didn't call it off, it was called off on you, or what's, or did,
yeah,
you,
yeah, it was called off, wasn't mutual.
No, okay. Yeah,
and
yeah,
I'm not afraid to say that it was, yeah, called off on me. And what's funny is everyone asks the natural next question, well, why did you call it off? Did you cheat? Did you lie? Did you do certain things? And it was never predicated on that. I, yeah, think it was predicated on me not establishing the relationship in a position of, like, when you give and give and give and give and give,
okay,
when you start to take,
yeah,
it lends itself to someone who's used to you giving being ungrateful, yeah, and also just challenged by, you know, changing in life. And I think that's why,
yeah, sure,
relationships that we see today where someone's been together for 35, 40, 50 years,
yeah,
my parents are, you know, my parents were high school sweethearts, yeah, still together today.
Yeah.
And that's because life changes. The roller coaster,
yeah,
of life,
totally,
changes.
Yeah.
But having somebody that understands you're a good person and who you are, and,
yeah,
when you make mistakes, can go through the grace of forgiveness and also can have that reciprocated on both ends,
yeah,
leads itself to what, yeah, a long-term relationship was. And I think my, you know, I haven't talked to my ex-fiance in a very, very long time, but,
yeah,
my guess is it was somebody who was looking for a relationship or a marriage or a wedding, more importantly than the tough pieces of, yeah, what a relationship requires.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. I mean, in some ways that, I mean, as difficult as that is, it's, of course, it's probably the best, right?
Oh,
to
it's
come
a blessing.
Up to, it's very, yeah, difficult to be in a relationship, right? It's so hard because you do, there is this weird thing of, like, being in love with who you think the person is,
mm-hmm,
or Or what you you know, there's like so, it's so hard
or what they provide to you.
You're right.
Yeah.
Or what they provide to you. You're in a relationship because you're trying to get
or the timing of when it aligns. Like, you know.
Yeah. Totally.
Like, the timing of when that person comes into your life and where you're at in a mental headspace in that. Yeah. And you know, I've been.
That's why I always tell my wife. I always tell her. She gives me. I say this is like, you know, I don't need you. I want you.
And there's a huge difference.
Right? And then so
it's the world's biggest difference.
It's like, I had, and same thing. I mean, I had relationships, all kinds of stuff, you know, broken hearts and all that kind of stuff. But until I actually became a follower of Christ, like I wasn't able to look at myself, at truly who I was. Mm. And then to get my worth outside of being in some kind of relationship or my work or whatever, to be able to go like, and then I was able to find somebody who, same thing, like, she loves like God before more than me,
which is
like
totally different than today's dating scene. I'm currently single and I've dated a fair amount, but I'm all for self-love.
Was that like a humble brag? I've dated for no, I'm just kidding.
No. I don't consider that a humble brag. I consider that
but he is available.
Yeah.
No.
Currently.
Just like that dynamics of that's hard. I'm sorry you went through that, but
I'm thankful
probably
for it.
You'll be a better prepared for your next relationship.
Yeah, I mean,
right?
I'm thankful for it. I've referenced this before, but like there's a country music song, God's greatest gifts are unanswered prayers, right? Because you pray for what you want in life, but sometimes what you want in life is not necessarily for you. There's a there's a quote I saw literally yesterday on Instagram. One of the greatest things is like the things you see when scrolling sometimes. And it's like you're praying for a rose, but God's preparing you a garden.
Yeah, right.
And it's like there's a piece of that I think at that time I definitely wanted that relationship to work. It didn't.
Yeah.
And I'm thankful for it now.
Yeah.
I wasn't thankful for it then. I'm thankful for it now because it's allowed me to become not only a better version of myself, but a more true version of myself because I wasn't finding my worth in the relationship.
Yeah.
I'm now finding my worth in myself and my love with God and my relationship with my family and being more predicated on those things.
Yeah, it's hard, man. It's hard being a human.
It's so hard, right? It's
but it's fun.
Yeah.
You look like you're having fun.
I'm having
I think
great
in this
time.
Stage of your life, you look like you're having fun. I mean, like when I've seen you, right? Like,
if you're not having fun, you're doing it wrong.
I guess. I don't know. I'm having fun. David, are we having fun? Thumbs up from behind
double
the
thumbs way up.
way up.
I think
we woke them up.
That's a Disney. That's actually a Disney movie reference. I'll have to drop in the comments if they know what Disney movie reference
that was.
Double thumbs way up.
Oh really? That's a. Yeah. Oh, see, I'm not a Disney guy. Sorry.
Probably best.
I mean, I do appreciate it, but to me, it's like. I mean, I appreciate it, but to me, it's like it's phony atmosphere. I'm not into like paying $97 for a hamburger, standing in line for 45 minutes
for
3 seconds.
If it was the best hamburger you've ever had, would you feel more?
No.
Smart.
Because I'll go get, you know, $2 tacos at Jack in the Box because it's utilitarian.
Dude, Jack in the Box tacos?
Those are bad.
So
they
good.
They do affect
They're
me.
So bad. It's so good. Yeah, I'm more of a Taco Bell guy.
Oh, really?
Taco that's one. Bell. That's one of my hot takes. Taco Bell.
I haven't gone to Taco Bell in a long time, and I tried it the other day. Well, a little while, and I was like, "Oh, this isn't bad."
Yeah. They have probably one of the more creative food departments than most fast food joints. Typically,
have you been
to
the Cantina one?
Of course, I've been to the Cantina one. What kind of question is that? Absolutely.
So then, but let's talk real tacos, though.
Yeah, real tacos.
Who? I know you can't be biased in some ways, probably, right?
Yeah, I'm literally hosting a competition to
find
out. Yeah,
but wouldn't you say, and so you picked certain places because you think that they're worthy to go against each other. Is that the thing?
No, it's definitely curious. So Taco Throwdown happening May 4th. There's my humble plug.
Tickets on Eventbrite today.
So I curated a list of about 150. I can only fit 20.
Wow.
And not everyone's going to want to participate.
How did you do the research for 150 taco providers?
Well, some of them are also not taco providers, right?
Okay.
Like some of them are Italian restaurants.
That you were going to bring to a taco. You were saying hey, chef.
Yeah, put it together.
Okay.
Yeah, put together a taco that connects with your brand. And I think that's the diversity of that is what I think really makes the event interesting.
Okay.
It's one thing for me to create a bracket of all the different food trucks on Story Road and be like, all right, we're going to go try all the tacos, which I think if you haven't done, you should do because it's amazing.
Yeah.
But I like the idea of like, man, Relati's Ristorante, if they were to put forward a taco, what would it be? It's an Italian restaurant.
Yeah.
And they're going to find out, and they're going to put it together, and then
I'm torn with that idea.
Yeah. Because it's like, do I want a chicken parm taco? Yeah. Probably not.
Do I want it? I mean, I know a lot of people who serve me up salsa, and I'm like, this is like Italian.
Well,
like,
there's a challenge on that, right? It's like touching and hopefully through the diversity of people that are represented at this event, it's like there is a touch on the authentic. There is a touch on the modern and creative.
Sure.
There is a touch
the
on
fusion.
Yeah, exactly.
So, the world wrap burrito.
And there's two awards. There's the judge's choice. And I'm being very, very specific on the type of judges that I'm having represent this, who I think can represent both the authentic and the creative.
Yeah.
And then there's the people's choice, which is based off taste, based off the popularity contest of like, this is my favorite taco that I'm throwing down. And and I thought that, you know, putting 20 people together to present that is a interesting narrative. And I agree with you. Like, there's a moment for authentic tacos, and then there's a moment for, wait, you put chicken bacon ranch in a quesadilla. I'm so lost. But
So then you had 150 to start out with, different restaurants.
Different restaurants and food trucks.
So food vendors of sorts. And then you whittled it down. They didn't have to be Mexican food.
Nope.
Yeah. So now you have it down to 20?
Yeah. So I'm finalizing the 20. Right now I have about 15 locked in of people that I think are going to be interesting. It's going to be an interesting event. Yeah. And some of them, you know, it's Cinco de Mayo weekend. That's going to be a challenging weekend for events and for Mexican restaurants. Mexican restaurants are going to be packed. Yeah. So I've tried to curate a list of interesting, like, ones that I go, I actually would like to figure out what that's about, along with the taco purveyors that I think do just, like, they do excellent jobs here.
And then let's do that. Let's go that then. Let's go, if you're talking traditional taco.
Yeah.
Who's your go-to? It could be just your own. This is your personal choice.
Personal choice. I'm going to call out Pinto Casino. Pinto Casino Mexicana, who I actually had at Creekside Socials a fair amount of time. They do a... You know, they specifically, when you're talking about a taco, we got to talk about the tortilla.
Yeah, totally.
And they go back to the heritage using, I'm going to totally butcher this word, and I apologize in advance, but nixtamalization, which is like an old school technique on how, like, people actually made ground the corn together to make tacos. So I got to call out Pinto as one who I think is doing a good job. And he actually doesn't come from a food background. He comes from a food truck manufacturing background.
Oh, interesting.
His family manufactured food trucks.
And he was got into
and
it.
And he's like, I want a food truck. So then they made Pinto. And I also really enjoy Las Delegas, which is right outside your door here. Yeah. I think they do a good job. Yeah. Those are some that
so
I would
then,
pick.
So then the Pintos, what was it called?
Pinto Casino Mexicana.
Where's that at?
It's a food truck.
It's traveling. Do I have to look online?
You got to find them.
Because I want to
try
that. Yeah.
They do some interesting pop-ups actually at their warehouse too sometimes. So I don't know if you saw at New Year's Eve, they did the Last Supper. And the Last Supper was a pop-up that they did inside of their warehouse. It was fantastic. It was a cool event. Yeah.
That's cool. Okay, so that's the tradition. Now go on. Who do you have on the plate at this point of experimental, like bringing
– Yeah.
That's going to be like somebody who does cotton candy
right?
And now is going to do a taco.
Hopefully not doing cotton candy. I was hopefully smart enough in some of the selections. Sushi Confidential. Randy's throwing
Randy's
a taco, and I'm excited to see what that comes. So this is an event.
Cool.
This is an event based off something I've seen in other markets do. This isn't a new idea. It's a taco competition.
Sure.
But the ones that always interest me are like the Hawaiian tacos. Like, what's a Hawaiian taco look like? What is a Italian's a far-fetched one, but I'm in conversations. Haven't locked down Rilates, but I'm 99.9% sure
Italian
they're going to be there. We'll
it's got
find
tomato.
Out.
Yeah. It's got,
I don't know what it's going to be, but they're going to put it together.
It's going to be a cannoli. I mean, I don't even know.
Yeah.
Ravioli.
Ravioli cannoli taco. We'll see what happens. So, there's a little bit of the one, the taco goer who's going to want to go for the taco. The two, the restaurant goer who's like, wait, these guys are here?
Yeah.
Then three, there's the food festival piece, right? How many times do you have 20 different restaurants in one building doing a taco throwdown? So hopefully that plays.
And is it going to be like a full-on competition, like they're going to walk up like an old school at a fair when they bring their pies up to the front and the judges are going to eat them live and all that kind of stuff?
The judges will be there. They're going to taste each one of the tacos.
Okay.
That's why also I have to be very careful on what judges I pick, because they're signing up to eat 20 tacos.
Yeah.
They got to taste them all. But I think, you know, I think it's cool to be like, all right, this person's the Judge's Choice Award, and then this is the People's Choice Award.
Yeah.
And there's a little bit of a cash prize for that, and I think it's cool. Going to be a cool event.
And where's it going to be at?
It's going to be a Blanco urban venue.
Oh, so at Blanco, okay.
In the heart of San Pedro, in the heart of San Jose, parking.
So it'll be using the whole space or just the bottom
whole
inside?
Space.
So
I'm using all three floors, so yeah, I think it's going to be a fun event.
Yeah, that's a great venue, too. That's cool. What's in your playlist right now? What music are you listening to?
Wow, what a great question. Not one I was expecting, to be honest with you. That and the mom one caught me a little bit off guard, but I like it. No, so right now...
I mean, you are a DJ.
I am a DJ. What's funny is the majority of music I listen to is not stuff I typically play out.
Really?
Yeah.
And why is that? Is that because... I mean, when you're a DJ, this is what I've heard from other people.
Yeah.
Because you're thinking of the crowd.
The audience.
You're trying to get the crowd to tap their foot, dance, or riot, or whatever you want them to
Definitely
do.
Definitely riot. Yeah. Always a riot. Yeah. Absolutely.
So that's probably, is that what's why you don't listen to the same stuff that you spin, as the kids say?
Typically, yeah. I try to, you know, there's all these different techniques in DJing, right? There's like scratching, and then there's like, you know, beat matching, which like the whole sync button became this whole giant thing because anyone can DJ. But really, if you're a talented DJ, looking at the crowd and knowing what they want and giving that to them is really what makes the difference between a good
and
DJ
leading them too, right?
Leading them, leading them where they want to go. Yeah. The build up, the process of the night. Right. Like sometimes you do need a moment of reprieve from the raging if the raging is going to continue into the late early morning.
Yeah.
But it's about looking at the crowd, reading the crowd, knowing what to play, when to play it. So sometimes I'll listen to music. I have to be in that particular mindset where I'm listening from a DJ's perspective.
Right.
And then there's the music I like to listen to from a personal perspective. Yeah. Some personal artists I typically listen to. John Bellion is probably my favorite artist of all time. He's a songwriter for a lot of different people, but he puts out his own music, and I would say he's probably my favorite artist.
Okay.
Right now I love Noah Kahan, who's kind of having a heyday. He was nominated for a Grammy. He's an incredible songwriter. Eric Church, bringing my country roots into it. Eric Church's early stuff I think is pretty fantastic. But it also calling out my church, Vive Worship. When I'm in a moment of worship, they put out their own music, which I think is pretty spectacular.
Okay.
Yeah. So it just depends on what emotional feeling I want to feel.
Yeah,
if
totally.
I want to get, you know, jacked up to hit the gym, I'm listening to AC/DC. If I'm, you know, wanting to kind of sit in my thoughts and think and process, I'll probably throw in John Bellion. If I'm wanting to dance, like real dance, I'll, you know, look up whatever new disco sound is coming out or whatever, you know, low-key house is having its day. So I try, my playlist is, it's eclectic, it's anarchy, it's chaos. Some of it doesn't make sense. You're like, wait, why is, but then when we talk about karaoke, I definitely have my go-tos.
That's right. I saw you in your Instagram doing a karaoke. What song do you pull out? If we were to do karaoke right now, do you have your song that you would pick?
I have two or three.
Okay, what's your top?
Everybody, Backstreet Boys.
Backstreet Boys, awesome.
Got to pull out what you know. That's a fun one because I'm more of a showman than I am a great singer.
So you can bring in the – can you do all the dance moves?
I can't do all the dance moves. I definitely dance. Yeah. I'm definitely.
Did you want to be in a boy band when you were younger?
Absolutely, 100%. I did my hair different to match whatever boy band. Like, some of it's painful to see now.
Yeah, I'd love to see those. We're gonna cue those up in.
We're
gonna call up your mom
with the highlights and the whole thing.
Sweet,
No, it's
everybody's got their
Everybody
hair,
by Backstreet Boys. I also, going back to the Disneyland reference, Aladdin, A Whole New World. If I'm doing a duet with somebody,
awesome. You got the chops to pull that one off?
For A Whole New World, it's not that I have the chops. It's that I've had 15 to 20 years being able to match pitch on that song.
Okay, yeah, you got that song.
I got the time more than the actual
skill
set.
Where do you go for karaoke if you're going out? Do you go to
Discovery Fusion Barbecue. So I have a friend of mine through church who introduced me to her friend, and now we've become friends. Her name's Demi. She apparently sang on American Idol. And Discovery Fusion Barbecue has her come and sing at the restaurant.
Cool.
It's every Saturday, but it changes. Yeah. So she'll go sing and basically...
And then open it up for the...
Open it up to karaoke. And it's become this weird social stalwart of mine that I really enjoy doing.
I've actually never, ever been to a karaoke bar.
Let alone
like
in
that.
A Chinese restaurant.
Well, I've been to Chinese restaurants, but
but karaoke in a Chinese restaurant.
I have not done karaoke. My wife, I actually, when we were here, my wife has a great voice.
Okay,
and so
awesome.
I always want her to do it, but you know, like I said, let's go. Yeah. And she's like, no, I would love to. I can't sing to save my life. So
yeah,
those are the fun
moments though, is when you have somebody that you know and you bring them to this karaoke just to kind of hang out, have a couple Sapporos and relax. And then they go up there and they crush it.
Really?
And you're like,
what? I didn't know you could sing. Yeah.
What just happened? And they're like, oh, I was in, you know, XYZ or I sang in the choir or whatever. And you're like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that about you. And it just adds a certain level of contextual reference. But I always, for whatever reason, for better or worse, to the diners at Discovery Fusion Barbecue, have a great time there. I really enjoy it.
That's good. Are you a podcast guy where you work? Do you listen to podcasts or anything like that?
I do. I listen to Content Magazine's podcasts.
You don't say that.
I do. You know, I not as much.
But is there anything that for like a business?
Oh, great question.
Like, any kind of like those kind that you go to?
Yeah, I listen to How I Built This is one. Full Comp by Josh Koppel is a restaurant podcast I listen to pretty frequently. Yeah. Content Magazine, I'm not joking when I say that. I really do listen to you guys just to kind of like also uncover, right? Like who's somebody in San Jose I don't know or the larger Silicon Valley that I don't know and it's doing interesting things. And
very kind. Thank
how
you.
Can we kind of plug
You're
them in?
You're an excellent marketer.
That's where I started. Yeah. That's where I started.
Then what business advice would you give to somebody? Because I know you're focused on business and growing businesses.
Totally.
And that, what would be something that you would say if somebody's listening and they're like, I really want to get into helping companies or businesses grow or start my own? What would be like one or two little tidbits?
One or two tidbits. First one's have a plan.
Yeah, that's a good idea, yeah.
And when you talk about business plans, like most people, I've written a lot of business plans for other restaurateurs.
Yeah.
And for me, it's like you need to have a plan on what you're trying to accomplish and understanding you're not trying to accomplish everything to everyone.
Right.
There can only be one Cheesecake Factory.
Right.
Like, exactly, with a you know.
And one's too many.
And one's too many in some instances. But, like, you can only – your job is – and then that follows to the second one, be the best at what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
Now, if you're trying to do a food truck, be the best food truck. If you're trying to be a Mexican food truck, like, all right, what makes the best Mexican food truck?
Yeah.
What does that look like?
Yeah.
And then just try to execute that to the best of your ability.
Yeah.
A lot of small businesses get stale because they don't try to improve anymore.
Yeah.
They've done their thing. They're happy with it. Yeah. It rides out into the sunset.
Yeah.
But it would be have a plan and try to be the best at that plan.
Awesome. Cool. What's a book that you've read lately that you've really enjoyed that kind of affected you?
Unreasonable Hospitality by Will Gadara, who was the general manager of 11 Madison Park and then became the owner of 11 Madison Park, which was voted the number one restaurant in the world a couple years ago. It covers hospitality, but also what it really covers to me is uncovering areas of opportunities to really differentiate your business and the experience to other people. And it's really by treating them like people.
Yeah.
Understanding like, hey, I'm looking for something specific. You know, he talks about this story about he's at a 3-star Michelin restaurant doing French cuisine.
Mm-hmm.
And he overhears, you know, somebody talking at a table and they go, oh, my gosh, we tried all the food in New York that New York has to offer, except we did not have a New York hot dog. And he sends a food runner to go buy a hot dog, bring it back to the restaurant, prepare it. And then he drops at the table. We heard.
You
didn't get the opportunity to experience a New York City hot dog. That is cool, and that is where you leave a lasting impression on somebody because you looked
tailored
at them.
It's made.
You tailored by design the experience that they got to have based on the experience that they're wanting.
Yeah.
And that is really kind of the ethos of what I do and try to do for my company, for my clients, and for the city of San Jose as a whole.
Yeah, that's cool. Last thing. Your friends and family, people close to you, what's the words that they use to describe you?
Tough question.
And I'm going to call them up and verify. So
good. I'll give you a list. I just won't give you my roommate because that's the person who knows all the secrets. No, I would say they authentic, definitely authentic. Okay. I'm not afraid to wear my heart on my sleeve and also transparent because people know where I stand. Also, heartfelt. I try to be really heartfelt, and that's actually a piece of the puzzle I get from my mom. You know, my mom's one of the best gift givers I know, where she not only gives gifts, it's not a gift card. You're not getting the Starbucks gift card. You're getting the one thing you talked about that one time.
Right.
That like means something.
Yeah, yeah.
So I try to implement that character of my mom, and it's heartfelt, transparent, and authentic. And then those that know me in business would, I hope they say ethical.
Yeah.
I try to operate really to the standard of code, where if I got to watch the movie of Zach Waldron's life back, that I can feel proud about what I put forward.
Yeah. Cool. Right on. Awesome. Well, thank you for your time. And then why don't you go ahead and plug the full
deal.
The full on the taco.
Yeah.
So and then your company name, website, all the our
love that.
Instagrams.
All the grams and stuff. Yeah. So for those that want to find me personally, at Zach.Waldron, pretty self-explanatory. Tailored by Design, we're a placemaking consulting firm that specializes in restaurants and real estate and creating high-quality events. And then the Taco Throwdown, happening May 4th at Blanco Urban Venue from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. We're going to have 20 different restaurants and taco trucks throwing down for what taco is supreme in the city of San Jose.
And to get tickets for that, it is in Eventbrite.
Yeah, there's an Eventbrite link.
Would we search it as? Taco?
Taco Throwdown. Silicon Valley Taco Throwdown. Silicon Valley Taco. Okay. And you can do TBD Presents, or you can find the link at my website, tbdsanjose.com.
Awesome. Cool. Looking forward to it.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Zach. I really appreciate it.
I really appreciate it, too. Thanks. You guys take care.
Oof, there's a good time. Ooh.
Thank you for listening to the Content Magazine podcast. Follow us on social media at Content Mag. Become a member and help us to continue to tell the stories of the South Bay creatives. This episode's music is 408 by Jack Pavlina. Follow him on Spotify and also on his Instagram at Jack Pavlina Music.